Hello, everyone. This is Jonathan Lewis Duckworth from the American Literary Review, and I'm sitting down here with Gabino Iglesias, who I have the privilege of interviewing at StokerCon in Denver, the convention for horror writers. Gabino is the author of several books, including, most recently, The Devil Takes You Home. Now, first of all, Gabino, I want to congratulate you on your recent deal with Sony Pictures for a future film adaptation of your newest novel, The Devil Takes You Home, which is due for release in August with Mulholland Books. So I want to ask, what's the process of negotiating a deal with a movie studio like? And would you have any advice for an emerging author who might find themselves in a situation like that in the future? And finally, how did it feel when the offer first came to you?
First of all, thank you. If you're an indie writer, I had already gone through the process of an option, and my word of advice would be to get someone who's been through the process to take a look at that contract, because contracts are dangerous. This time around, it was a piece of cake, because this time around, my literary agent, Melissa Danasco, hooked me up with a film agent, I basically sat back and waited for the agent to tell me who I was meeting and when. And then I went to those meetings and we talked about the book. And then he started filtering rejections. We received about half a dozen very kind notes saying that the book was too brutal to bring to film. And then eventually, you know, we got a few offers and... It seemed like going with Sony was the best option because they already had attached Alejandro Brugués to the film. They actually sent him the book, asked him if he was interested. Alejandro is absolutely an outstanding director, and then we made it happen. Receiving the offer was a lot of fun, and it was also scary because in Hollywood, in publishing, everybody says no, and then eventually someone says yes, and you have a book. Apparently in Hollywood, it's the opposite. It's always, yes, 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 this is a thing, this is going to happen, this is great, and then it falls through. So right now I'm hoping that in the next 18 months of the option that we can get something on paper that the studio likes, and then they will give Alejandro Brugués the green light to go ahead. For me, I don't do movies. I do books. So for me, this was entirely new. And I'm hoping that it'll be a thing where it drives people to the book. Like knowing there's a movie coming, hey, check out the book first.
And it might open up to audiences who might not necessarily read.
Yes.
Yeah. Which is always a good thing. Mm. All right. And yeah. All right. So Gabino, something I've been wondering. If you could arm wrestle one living writer, who would it be and why?
All right, so by writer, are we talking about someone who actually writes, or are we talking about someone who puts out books?
That's a really good question, because a lot of people put out books who may not necessarily, like celebrities, who
right.
may not necessarily be writers. So
exactly.
I'm going to leave it open to you.
Then I'm going to go with Ted Cruz.
Good choice.
Yes, because I would really like to break his arm.
You and might have to go through Jim Jordan to get to him, though.
I have no problem with that.
All right. I think that was good, yeah. So, The Devil Takes You Home is an example of a synthesis of two genres, crime and horror. In what ways do you think the two genres complement or complicate each other? Do you feel that your background in crime fiction makes you a better horror writer, and vice versa? And what other genres or modes of writing are you interested in exploring?
For me, the actual base of both crime fiction and horror is exactly the same. It's taking individuals who are quote-unquote normal, and then you put them in really bad situations, and then the rest of the writing is figuring out what they do to get out of that situation. In crime, it's desperate acts, once you put in the supernatural aspect that horror fiction usually brings, it's either, you know, finding a way out, doing an exorcism, surviving the haunted house, whatever it is that you're doing. So it's the same basically for me. I actually started writing horror first, but then I spent a lot of years writing crime, and they always went hand in hand. I think they're the best dancing partners. Horror itself might be the best dancing partner because you can mix it with absolutely everything. Fantasy, romance,
fantasy, Western
comedy,
yeah.
Whatever you want, it mixes well with it. So when I'm approaching my stories, I forget about genre. Genre is for telling librarians where to put the book, and for marketing. And these days, everything that's dark and hard to market is going to be called a thriller, so I don't worry too much about the other two. Yeah, that's about it.
Great.
Wait, there was a second part to that question.
What other genres or modes of writing are you interested in exploring?
Oh, sci-fi. Yes, oh, yeah. Sci-fi. I love, because I love aliens.
Nice.
And sci-fi mixes also very well with horror. So
you could have a crime sci-fi horror novel.
That's probably going to be one of the books down the road.
Nice. So, which situation would be more terrifying for you? To be pursued by Anton Chigurh from No Country for Old Men, or to run out of gas in Leatherface's neck of the woods?
Leatherface. One is a bad human. The other is a monster.
Well, so that's interesting, because I feel like if Anton Chigurh wants to get you, you're going to get got.
Yes.
Whereas with Leatherface, you just have to praise the slaughterhouse industry, and his family will take you in as one of their own.
That's a good point, yeah. It depends. One has the crime swagger. He doesn't run, and Leatherface is. You can see him coming. He runs. He's
got a chainsaw.
Bigger.
That's loud.
Chainsaw. So yeah. Huh. Good point.
All right. I think most writers have at least one much beloved author whose hype they just don't buy. For whatever reason. For Tolstoy, it was Shakespeare. For Nabokov, it was Faulkner. And for me, it's James Joyce. I won't go into that. Is there any literary godhead you'd like to call out as a fraud, even at the risk of being canceled?
Franzen.
Oh, that's a good one.
Yeah, I mean, not a bad writer, not horrible. But I've read his work, trying to find the excitement, trying to find something that makes me feel, whether it's grief or, excited or fear or tension. And I've never been able to find any of that. It's just a whole bunch of words that tell a story. They sound very well together because he can write a sentence. And then at the end of those 500, 400, 600 pages, you think to yourself, I would have... A better investment of my time would have been four action-packed novellas instead of this book. Mm-hmm. So, Franzen.
Okay, good
calling
choice.
Him out. I'm here. You know where to find me, Jonathan.
All right. So in addition to your writing, you've also taught creative writing at the university level. Most recently, you were a visiting professor at Arizona State University. As an instructor, how would you describe your pedagogical priorities? What do you really want students to learn when they're in your class? And how do you approach workshopping their stories?
Number one, I hate workshopping. It's one of those systems that we created because we don't have a better option. But I try not to do standard workshops because those are rarely as productive as we want them to be. I'm bringing my love of literature in general to the classroom because... for example, I teach at SNHU. I have a lot of students who write historical fiction, a lot of students who write fantasy, a lot of students who write science fiction, and some students who write romance. So it's not necessarily my cup of tea, but I'm not there for my personal pleasure. I'm there to help them make their manuscripts better. And we start with the absolute basics. At some point, you have to go through classes where you need to understand how to build a paragraph, how to tell a story, how to do dialogue, that you need to learn about economy of language and pacing and all that stuff. So by the time they get to me, I'm more concerned on three guiding questions. Why are you writing this book? Let's get to the core of that question. What are you getting out of it? What are your readers going to get out of it? So those three questions, if we can tackle those three, then we can move forward and work on it doesn't move well or the parts, they need a little bit of connective tissue. So what I want them to take away from each one of my classes is sort of you have a purpose. You're not just writing because it's fun to get an MFA or, you know, publish something once in a while. There's something deeper, and let's get to that and let it guide the rest of your work.
Yeah, and I'm glad that your pedagogy prioritizes the sort of feedback between reader and writer, because I think a lot of, I've taught, you know, beginning workshops, creative writing class as well, and I find a lot of students, a lot of beginning writers have never really considered that someone might read this one day.
Yeah, exactly. It's okay that if it's for you, if you're processing trauma, but then maybe don't bring it to a class and don't try to get it published, because then it's no longer just for you.
Yeah, so, exactly.
Yeah.
Your prose often resonates with a powerful lyricism. Do you read poetry? And if so, who are some of your favorite poets?
I read a lot of poetry. It's sort of like candy to me on the side. And from time to time, it surprises me that I can read poetry from 100 years ago and try to understand it. And I can also read poetry right now on Twitter from some random person that I did not even know read poetry. It's like tiny beats and pieces of things. I turn to it when I feel like I'm trying to say something important, and it's taking me way too many words to get to the core of what I want to say. Any poet that's relatively decent reminds you very well of what you can do with very few words. So just like some people read James Ellroy for the, you know, the speed, I'm gonna get this story out of the way. I turn to poets, just like Sina Pelayo, who is here. I turn to poets to remind myself that you can do a lot in a limited space. And I enjoy absolutely everything. I try to read, this year I couldn't do it, but I try to read and review for Peg Magazine, one book of poetry every day of April for National Poetry Month. So yeah, I love it. I absolutely love it. I don't write it, but I do love it.
Yeah, and I think what I like about that answer is that the way that one thing that poetry does that we don't necessarily get in prose, but something that prose can learn from poetry, is the ability to slow down the reader's attention.
Yes.
And that's the power of the line.
Yep.
And if you can build that same kind of, those sort of breaks into your fiction to draw the reader's attention, that can have powerful effects.
Yeah, no, totally agreed. There's a in The Devil Takes You Home, there's a murder in which the guy is walking around the pickup truck and he's murmuring a prayer before he shoots this guy in the face. And you go to poetry, and poetry dictates the rhythm, because you have to force yourself to read the way that it's on the page. And so when I'm working on stuff like that, I'll go read poetry, and then I'll go like, yes, this thing has to be line of action, space, new line of the prayer, and so on and so forth. So you kind of grab that from poetry, because like you said, we can learn a lot.
All right.